Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Dinabhutale Sayam Pugadam Mayam Dati Sa Padantikam Vansakopadu Vrishya Kripasindu Vai Vrishya Pritanam Babali Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Nama. We've been reading from the ninth canto, actually up to chapter 4. It begins the two pastimes on Ambarish Maharaj, which is a wonderful pastime. But before we begin chapter 4, I wanted to play a little bit of a recording of Srila Prabhupada, because last class on Friday we heard the story of Chayavan Muni. So Prabhupada, I heard a tape after that or a conversation where Prabhupada told that story, and it was quite short. I think it takes about 12 minutes, and then he speaks about something else as well. So I thought I'd play that because it's rare that we'd hear Prabhupada say that one. It's also interesting how one of the common elements of many of the pastimes that we've come across already and will continue to come across in the ninth canto is cursing and counter-cursing. And that, even in this pastime of Chayavan Muni, that was one of the main elements. Chayavan Muni was afraid of being cursed. Or rather, the king was afraid of being cursed. There. It's a little hard to understand. Done this not consciously, but just she didn't know anything. So the father, the king, I think his name was Sarayati, he said to Chayavan Muni, "Please forgive. She's done it out of ignorance."
He was very angry. He said, "Chayavan Muni, his attitude was all in anger. All of them became very much happier." Then she asked, "Whether your girl is married?"
So then the Muni, he tended to get very angry. He was that kind of an old man, and Muni. So then he asked, "Is your daughter married?"
King could understand that he wants to marry my daughter. Otherwise, why is he going?
So he didn't directly ask, but he indirectly said, "Is your daughter married?" So the king understood what was on the old Muni's mind.
"And you are so old, and I am, but my skin is still tight. And all loose, my bed is like that."
So he was so old, Prabhupada says, I have got my skin so tight, but his was all loose.
They're all flat. And he was old.
He was old.
So he actually, I don't know, so he said, yes, in the sense, if he's not married, if he's left, I offer no daughter to him. Then everything was secular. But the daughter was young and he was like her great-grandfather.
Like a great-grandfather.
Yeah. That was not at all suitable, but he had to offer.
He had to offer. It was not suitable, but he had to offer.
So this girl also took it seriously.
The girl took it seriously.
And she was serving the old husband very faithfully, like a honest-faced wife. Never mind. Then, some days after, the same saintly person was visited by two heavenly physicians, Ashwini Kumar.
Saivanmuni was visited by the two.
Ashwini Kumar, they had some difficulty. They are not allowed in the society of the demigod while drinking somaro. He had some defects, something like that.
They couldn't take somaras in the society of the demigod. They had some defects or something like that, Prabhupada said.
So when the physician came to see Chavanmani, he said that if you can give me young age, beautiful, you can make me by your treatment, beautiful young man, which is very pleasing to young girls, that I shall give you the facility of drinking somaras in the society of them.
So if you can make me young,
yes,
very pleasing to a young girl, beautiful like that, I'll give you the facility to allow you to drink somaras. And they said, yes.
So he made a very nice, beautiful looking young man.
So they made him into a beautiful
by
person.
Taking him to a certain lake. They dip down, and all of them become fresh young men, beautiful, very beautiful.
So dip them in a lake, all three of them.
So this chaste wife, they could not, she could not recognize who is my husband.
So she couldn't recognize which one is her husband.
Very beautiful young man.
Chaivanmuni his followers, or
No, Chaivanmuni became young.
Yeah.
And those Ashwini Kumar also did.
Oh, they always did.
Because they dipped down in a certain lake.
In the Bhagavatam it describes how he was so old he couldn't go in the lake himself, so they had to take him. So they went in also.
In this way, he became a very beautiful young man. Then, her Somjogga, his father-in-law, the daughter's father came. He came. So he was surprised. I was there. My daughter is another young man.
My daughter is with a young man.
Yes.
Yeah. Surprised.
And yeah. Said, what is this? You are defaming your husband's family and my family. He began to chastise
him.
And just see.
As if she was defaming both Chaivanmuni's family and their family by her unchaste act, because she was with a young man.
Yeah. Because he sees that I got my daughter married with old Chaman. I was then with a young man. It's condemned like anything. Yeah. And she was laughing.
She was laughing.
She knew that I have not changed my husband, I have changed her body. Then he said, my dear father, don't be angry, he is your real son-in-law. He has become now young while treatment. Then he was very pleased and embraced her daughter and said, your man. This is Vedic
civilization.
Even one has got old, going to die, husband, She cannot change.
Chastity.
Once a woman was married, then that was finished. No more no connection with any other man.
No, that's one man is sufficient. She must be man. Very faithful to her. Just. That is what. Not that I do not like this husband, I change. That is not.
That's Western
mentality.
Whatever your father and mother has chosen, that's all. He is your also possible husband. This point I wanted to bring. And his father was surprised. How is that? I got him married with an old man. Some other circumstances I was obliged. How is that we have picked one young man? He chastised her like any. Then when he came to understand that the same old man has become now a young man by medical treatment, then you are satisfied. So you cannot change. I have seen it on my father's friend. He was a very old man. My father was also. He was at that time not less than 65. But his wife died and he was married with another young girl.
His wife died?
But his sister forced him to marry. That unless you marry, he will look after you, you have no children.
Unless you
marry. But I have seen.
Unless you marry, who will look after you? You have no children? He said, I've seen. He was 65 and he married a young girl. 20.
A young woman was married with that gentleman who, in our childhood, we used to call her Didi. Didi means elder sister. The relationship was very thick and thin. But that old man, not that 65, and this young woman, now at most 20 to 25. She was serving the husband like this. There is no question of changing or being disabled.
Now they bring him up to be independent.
But it is a question of culture. She was king's daughter, a royal, a man with muni and old, rotten, older than me. All his skin had become flattened. But still, she was silent. It's like what's your law. The age difference is great grandfather and great granddaughter. You'll find in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Shiva, he could not construct even a house. He was laying underneath a tree. And his wife, Durga, Sististhiti Pala Sadhana Sakti. She can create a new world.
So powerful, Durga. His wife.
She's living with her husband underneath a tree.
And they're living under a tree?
Never claims by her husband, if you cannot, I can make one. Tell the story about that.
She didn't say, if you can't get us a house, I can make one. Because she's Durga in charge of the material world. She didn't say that. There's a story about that.
People criticize us. All right, let us have some house. So, Lord Shiva, Durga, both of them capable to do anything. So, they constructed a very nice gold. Now it's her leaf.
So they constructed a gold house
now so that people were criticizing. New house center ceremony.
So they had a Prihapravesh house center and ceremony.
So one Bhargava Muni was invited as Brahman, many other Brahmins. So they began to eat so much that story I forget it. Then whatever stock they have finished, then when, after eating, when they wanted, they give us dakshina. Dakshina, because after eating.
So they had given them, they had offered so many Brahmins to eat, and they ate so much, they ate everything, and after eating, they were supposed to give them some dakshina.
Lots of high pressure, I get everything I have finished.
So there's nothing left to give them.
Then they become puzzled what to do. The Lord Shiva says, all I you take this.
Again they become one under the tree. All right, I what shall I take this up? Don't bother. Well, our center ceremony was, as a result of that ceremony, they became again landed in the tree.
Next.
So we're reading from this fourth chapter of the Ninth Canto. So many little stories with their own meanings and purports. So Sukadev Goswami said, the son of Nabhaga named Nabhaga lived for a long time at the place of his spiritual master. Therefore his brothers thought that he was not going to become a grihastha and would not return. So he lived for so long, this Nabhaga lived so long at the home of the spiritual master, his brothers thought he was never going to return and become a grihastha. Consequently, without providing a share for him, they divided the property of their father amongst themselves. When Nabhaga returned from the place of his spiritual master, they gave him their father as his share, because they thought that he was going to remain a brahmachari his whole life, so they distributed his father's wealth. So when, describes it in the next verse. So when Nabhaga came, he inquired, "My dear brothers, what have you given to me is my share of our father's property." His elder brothers answered, "We have kept your father as your share," because they didn't know what to do. But when Nabhaga went to his father and said, "My dear father, my elder brothers have given you as my share of property," the father replied, "My dear son, do not rely upon their cheating words. I am not your property." Nabhaga's father said, "All the descendants of Angira are now going to perform a great sacrifice. But although they are very intelligent, on every sixth day they will be bewildered in performing sacrifice and will make mistakes in their daily duties." Prabhupada's short purport. Nabhaga was very simple-hearted. Therefore, when he went to his father, in compassion for his son, suggested that as a means of livelihood, Nabhaga could go to the descendants of Angira and take advantage of their misgivings in performing yajnas. So Nabhaga's father continued, "Go to those great souls and describe two Vedic hymns pertaining to Vishvadev. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and are going to the heavenly planets, they will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. Therefore, go there immediately." Thus Nabhaga acted exactly according to the advice of his father. And the great sages of the Angira dynasty gave him all their wealth and then went to the heavenly planets. Why did they give him their wealth before going to the heavenly planets? Because there is a different type of wealth in the heavenly planets. Everything is more opulent and everything is very subtle on the heavenly planets. And that is the difference between the pleasures on the earth planet or the lower planets and the higher planets, that on the higher planetary system everything is very subtle. And therefore, because the enjoyment is subtle, the enjoyment is still greater. So they left behind the lesser enjoyment, the wealth, when they went to heaven. So even by the virtue of that sacrifice, they could go to the heavenly planets right there. So they left behind, they were pleased with Nabhaga, so they gave him wealth. Thereafter, when Nabhaga was accepting the riches, a black-looking person from the north came to him and said, "All the wealth from this sacrificial arena belongs to me." Nabhaga then said, "These riches belong to me. The great saintly persons have delivered them to me." When Nabhaga said this, the black-looking person replied, "Let us go to your father and ask him to settle our disagreement." In accordance with this, Nabhaga inquired from his father. The father of Nabhaga said, "Whatever the great saints sacrificed in the arena of the Daksha Jagga, they offered to Lord Shiva as his share. Therefore, everything in the sacrificial arena certainly belongs to Lord Shiva." Thereupon, after offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, because that the blackish fellow was actually Lord Shiva, so when he understood that, he offered obeisances to Lord Shiva, Nabhaga said, "O worshipable Lord, everything in this arena of sacrifice is yours. This is the assertion of my father. Now with great respect, I bow my head before you, begging your mercy." Lord Shiva said, "Whatever your father has said is the truth, and you are also speaking the same truth. Therefore I, who know the Vedic mantras, shall explain transcendental knowledge to you." Lord Shiva said, "Now you may take all the wealth remaining from the sacrifice, for I give it to you." After saying this, Lord Shiva, who was most adherent to the religious principles, disappeared from that place. If one hears and chants or remembers this narration in the morning and evening with great attention, he certainly becomes learned, experienced in understanding the Vedic hymns, and expert in self-realization. Nice little pastime. The virtue of being good and doing the right thing. Because ultimately, naturally, we're afraid of always being cheated and taking care, and therefore we take care of ourselves. But unless Krishna sanctions a cheating, we can't be cheated. Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna wants us harmed, who can protect us? And if Krishna wants us protected, who can harm us? So everything ultimately depends on Krishna. From the Bhaga, Maharaj Ambarish took birth. Maharaj Ambarish was an exalted devotee, celebrated for his great merits. Although he was cursed by an infallible Brahmana, the curse could not touch him. King Parikit inquired, Sukadeva Goswami, of course, was speaking to Maharaj Parikit. "O great personality, Maharaj Ambarish was certainly most exalted and meritorious in character. I wish to hear about him. How surprising it is that the curse of a Brahmana, which is insurmountable, could not act upon him." So more cursing. We heard in earlier that... who was cursed earlier? By the curse of Lord Shiva's pronouncement. Then the Sidhunya, was it? He became alternating months, male, female, male, female, male, female. And then there was another one, Prasadra, who was cursed because he had killed a cow, thinking it was a tiger. So he was cursed to become a Sudra, I think. Mm. And then he defeated that curse by becoming so pure that he went back to Godhead. And he was so detached from his body that he saw a forest fire, and he just decided to burn up his body and be released from it, because the body, after all, is a cage. We're so attached to it, and we so much desire to get pleasure from it, but actually it's like a cage. and the soul is meant to be, the children in the back should be good, otherwise I'll have to sit in the corner. And now another curse, and this one is really heavy. This one's going to be thrown by Daksha. I mean, who by who? Durvasa Muni, who's a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. So Sukadeva Goswami is going to explain this pastime. So he says, Maharaj Ambarish, the most fortunate personality, achieved the rule of the entire world consisting of 7 islands and achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity on earth. Although such a position is rarely obtained, Maharaj Ambarish did not care for it at all, for he knew very well that all such opulence is material. Like that which is imagined in a dream, such opulence will ultimately be destroyed. The king knew that any non-devotee who attains such opulence merges increasingly into material nature's mode of darkness. Prabhupada's purport. For a devotee, material opulence is insignificant, whereas for a non-devotee, material opulence is the cause of increasing bondage. For a devotee knows that anything material is temporary, whereas a non-devotee regards the temporary so-called happiness as everything and forgets the path of self-realization. Thus, for the non-devotee, material opulence is a disqualification for spiritual advancement because attachment is so deep. But the devotee, his attachment to Krishna is much deeper, and he sees the material world in a neutral way. He sees the material world in such a way that nirbandha Krishna sambandha yukta bharagi uchita. He sees it neutrally and tries to use everything in Krishna's service. And it's said that Maharaj Ambarish, when he was ruling, and it describes that he was ruling in a desert place, and he made the desert blossom due to his powerful rulership. And just before, if you've ever visited Srinathji in Nathdwar, have you ever visited? Yes? And then when you go from Vrindavan there, there's one town called, I think it's called Kimkaroli, which was Maharaj Ambarish's capital. So his deities are there. And because it's in Rajasthan, because it's a very deserty place. So that's where he ruled from. And he made it blossom due to his good governance. And it is said that what he would do, he himself would do, was spend his time just in worshipping the deities. Like this, and this will be described in the later verses. He'd engage his mind, his senses, everything would be engaged in fully in Krishna's service. And by the potency that he gained from that, all the ruling would actually be done by his ministers, and he would just direct everything from the point of view of serving Krishna. So very wonderful. So Maharaj Ambarish was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva, and of the saintly persons who are the Lord, and of the saintly persons who are the Lord's devotees. Because of this devotion, he thought of the entire universe as being as insignificant as a piece of stone. So he wasn't at all enamored. And now here are the famous verses. Savai mana krishna praravindayo vicham sivakanta gunana vanane karoharaya mandira marjana dishu shrutim chakra chuta sadgatodaye. Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna. So this was the first thing. The first thing was that he engaged his mind. Manmana bhava madbhakto. Engage your mind, Krishna says, in thinking about me and become my devotee. So this is what Maharaj Ambarish did. He had that taste. His mind didn't want to wander from Krishna for even a moment because he had the taste. He was tasting that sweetness. And because of that, He had no taste for the material world. Param dishtanavartate. Unless we taste that sweetness, we'll naturally be attracted to the lesser sweetnesses of the material world. So it's very important for us to become satisfied in the sweetness of Krishna consciousness. In one sense, it's the most important thing. Because otherwise, we are bound, either today or tomorrow, to be pulled from this side to that side by... Because the soul is naturally pleasure-seeking. So we have to learn to penetrate deeply and achieve pleasure in Krishna's service. So Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna. His words in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, and his ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. So it's Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temples and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of Tulsi offered to the Lord. And he engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasad. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord, his head in bowing down before the Lord, and all his desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. Indeed, Maharaj Ambarish never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all his senses in devotional service and various engagements related to the Lord. This is the way to increase attachment for the Lord and be completely free from all material desires. In Bhagavad Gita 7.1, the Lord recommends Maya Ashakta Manaparta Yogam Yundan Marashraya. This indicates that one must execute devotional service under the guidance of a devotee or directly under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not possible, however, to train oneself without guidance from the spiritual master. Therefore, according to the instructions of Srila Rupa Goswami, the first business of a devotee is to accept a bona fide spiritual master who can train him to engage his various senses in rendering transcendental service to the Lord. The law also says in Bhagavad Gita 7.1, Asam Sayam Samagramam Yatagyasi Tatshanu. In other words, if one wants to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in completeness, one must follow the prescriptions given by Krishna by following in the footsteps of Maharaj Ambarish. It is said, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. Bhakti means to engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna, who is called Rishikesha, Achyuta. These words are used in this verse. Achyuta Satkatodaye Rishikesha Pada Bhavandane. The words of Achyuta and Rishikesha were also used in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna Katha, spoken directly by Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha, because everything described in the Bhagavatam is in relationship with Krishna. In the early chapters of the Bhagavatam, the sages ask Sutta Goswami many questions, but they said that please describe everything in relationship with Krishna. We don't want to hear anything that's not in relationship with Krishna. So they had that taste as well. These type of tastes are very rare. They're very, very wonderful. Bahu shakatvanantascha buddhaya avyasayinam. If our consciousness becomes many-branched, filled with many desires, it will not have the ability to progress very powerfully towards the lotus feet of Krishna or his service. So Maharaj Ambarish was such a great example for us to follow, and therefore he's often quoted that verse, especially those verses. So continuing. In performing his prescribed duties as king, Maharaj Ambarish always offered the results of his royal activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is the enjoyer of everything and is beyond the perception of material senses. He certainly took advice from Brahmanas who are faithful devotees of the Lord, and thus he ruled the earth, the planet Earth, without difficulty. So we'll read from the second half of the purport here. In modern times, there are legislative assemblies whose members are authorized to make laws for the welfare of the state. But according to this description of the kingdom of Maharaj Ambarish, the country or the world should be ruled by a chief executive whose advisors are all devotee brahmanas. Such advisors or members of the legislative assembly should not be professional politicians, nor should they be selected by the ignorant public. Nowadays, it's one of the ideals of the world, one of the great preachings of the world, that the right type of government is democracy, and you know, power to the people, and the people's will shall rule. But if the people are ignorant, Prabhupada would always point out, who will they elect as the leader? Another ignorant person, or the biggest ignorant person, or the most powerful ignorant person. So therefore, and what is the problem about having someone who is ignorant as a leader and as a lawmaker? The problem is there is no proper direction for society. And this is what we see today. Economic development, economic rationalism, this type of enjoyment, that type of enjoyment, make money and somehow spend your life, retire, live as opulently as you can when you're old. But then what? There is no direction, no indication that we're going to die, and that our consciousness, that the time of death, will dictate our next body. So because of the ignorance of this one fact, the whole society is misguided into thinking that life's goal is something very superficial and something temporary, and that sense gratification that's so easily available. But then what? Then when we die, what happens? Human life lost, animal birth. Not to speak of not really being peaceful or happy in this life. Everything's so unsettled, so much anxiety, nothing certain, culture lost, wealth lost. So the brahmanas, the significance of the brahmanas being in charge is that the brahmanas' business is to give the ultimate direction for the state. That means a spiritual direction. Material life certainly goes on, but within the frame of reference of an ultimate spiritual direction. So advisors or members of the legislative assembly should not be professional politicians, nor should they be selected by the ignorant public. Rather, they should be appointed by the king. When the king, the executive head of the state, is a devotee and he follows the instructions of devotee brahmanas in ruling the country, everyone will be peaceful and prosperous. When the king and his advisors are perfect devotees, nothing can be wrong in the state. All the citizens should become devotees of the Lord, and then their good character will automatically follow. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana savaragunas tatra samaste sura harava bhaktasya kutamahaguna manaratain asato davatobahi. One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all good qualities of the demigods, because he has an absolute reference point. He won't compromise his integrity, his relationship with Krishna, no price of enjoyment in the material world will shake him from that integrity. And a materialistic person, no matter how much integrity he has, he always will have a price. Because there is no... Because ultimately, he's self-centered, and a devotee is ultimately Krishna-centered. So this is what it means to be a devotee. Very, very, very wonderful to be a devotee, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that when I carefully observe the character of my spiritual master, Srila Gokishodas Babaji, I could understand that only a Vaishnava can actually have character within this world, have integrity in this world. Citizens under the guidance of the Krishna conscious king will become devotees, and there will be no need to enact new laws every day to reform the way of life in the state. If the citizens are trained to become devotees, they will automatically become peaceful and honest. And if they're guided by a devotee king, advised by devotees, the state will not be in the material world, but in the spiritual world. Prabhupada had full faith in this. I heard him recently speaking to a member of the police force somewhere in Chicago, I think in the United States. And there were some articles that he had read in Time magazine about crime and what to do, that everyone is always complaining that there's so much crime in the world, and indeed there is so much crime in the world, but what to do about it? You pass a law, and then the thieves figure out a way around the law, or no one listens to it, and more crime, and then another law, and it doesn't work. So Prabhupada had them go to the local police and say, the devotees, and say, we have a solution. So he actually came, one of the lieutenant mostly or something like that, he actually came to find out what Prabhupada's solution was. And he recorded it and brought it back to his superiors. He said, that's what he said. And Prabhupada's solution was actually very simple. He said, people commit crimes and do the wrong thing because of contamination in their heart. When one's heart is contaminated, especially by passion and ignorance, one will act improperly and break the law. So the natural way to stop people from breaking the law, which is caused by the contamination, is to remove the contamination. And how to remove the contamination? Well, we all know. Chant Hare Krishna. So he was preaching to the lieutenant like that, who was very, very respectful, actually. And so he said, we would like to, we're already doing this. And it was very wonderful to hear Prabhupada speak to the lieutenant, because he was very proud that his followers, his disciples, were of high character, meaning no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. He was very proud of that. And he pointed to that again and again and again to show the power of the Hare Krishna mantra. Unfortunately, we haven't been able often to keep to the standard that would make Prabhupada proud of us. But yet, this was very important for Prabhupada to not compromise these things. So he said, see, we're already doing this, but if we get some help from the government, we'll be able to expand our activities and do it on a larger scale and thereby stop the crime. And then, of course, Prabhupada asked for a building from him. He said, I noticed that there's a building over here that's owned by the government, and if you would just... And all we don't ask for very much. All we need is a place and some money for prasadam, so we can distribute prasadam. This is our process, he said. So then we can invite all the people to come and live with us, at least for some time, at least for 1 week, he said. We'll invite anyone. And then the lieutenant said, well, where would you like this place? Do you want to, you know, because if you're going to be distributing food, what people usually think is it should be in a poor area. And Prabhupada said, no. Do you think that the rich people aren't needy of the cleansing of the heart, and only the poor people are? But wherever we can have it, we'll work from there. And this, our program is very simple. Chanting Hare Krishna and distribute some spiritual refreshments of prasadam. And you'll see the results. Why don't you make an experiment, Prabhupada said, for 1 year. And the lieutenant was very polite and said, yes, I'll make this presentation to my superiors and we'll see. And Prabhupada had said the same thing more or less to the mayor of Evanston, Illinois, came and visited Prabhupada. It was so interesting to see, regardless of who Prabhupada was speaking to, he basically said the same thing. And he also always had an incredible ability, even though he was talking to a mayor or some big person. I also heard him talk to recently Anthony Toynbee, who was a very famous historian. And Prabhupada the conversation would always be centered around what Prabhupada wanted. Very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. So Prabhupada really trusted this completely, that if someone would just chant Krishna's names offenselessly, faithfully, offenselessly, congregationally, then their heart would be cleansed and difficulties would all be removed, and that and take prasad. Very wonderful. So the verses continue to read. In desert countries where there flowed the river Saraswati, Maharaj Ambarish performed great sacrifices like the Asvamedha Yajna, and thus satisfied the master of all yajnas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such sacrifices were performed with great opulence and suitable paraphernalia, and with contributions of dakshin to the brahmanas, who were supervised by great personalities like Vasishta. So again, Vasishta Muni is here. He's going to be here. He was present hundreds and hundreds of generations ago, thousands of years ago, and still Vasishta Muni is there. Asita and Gautam, representing the king, the performer of the sacrifices. So by virtue of Maharaj Ambarish's performance of these sacrifices, the desert bloomed. Rain came and the desert bloomed. And Prabhupada explains that in this day and age, the sacrifice, of course, due to the lack of Brahmins and because of being Kali Yuga, the sacrifice is the Sankirtan Jagya, the chanting of Krishna's names. So this is really the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavatam, the essence of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The last verse of the Bhagavatam, the very last verse explains this. It glorifies Sankirtan, the chanting of Krishna's names, by virtue of the chanting of Krishna's names, all the contaminations, the passion, the ignorance within the heart is removed. So in the sacrifice arranged by Maharaj Ambarish, the members of the assembly and the priests, especially the Huta Udgata Brahman and Advarju, were gorgeously dressed, and they all looked exactly like demigods. They eagerly sought the proper performance of the jagya. The citizens of the state of Maharaj Ambarish were accustomed to chanting and hearing about the glorious activities of the Personality of Godhead. Thus they never aspired to be elevated to the heavenly planets, which were extremely dear even to the demigods. A pure devotee who has been trained in the practice of chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord and his fame, qualities, form, paraphernalia, and so on, is never interested in elevation to the heavenly planets, even though such places are extremely dear even to the demigods. Narayana praksave nakritaschana bibhyati svaga pravaga narakeshu apituya tadashana. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan never fear any condition of life. This is the specific characteristic of a pure devotee, that he's fearless. Abhaya. Abhaya charana. Charana ravinda. Why is he fearless? Because he surrendered to Krishna. Lotripte varanam tata. He surrendered to Krishna, and again he understands that unless Krishna allows something to happen, it cannot happen. So what is a difficult situation for a pure and surrendered devotee when he's accepting everything as Krishna's mercy? But this can't be imitated unless one has to be surrendered to Krishna. But that makes one fearless, because a devotee on that level understands that he's living in Krishna's mercy. His life exists in Krishna's mercy. So therefore, he doesn't care where he is. Higher situation, lower situation. His interest is in remembering Krishna very, very deeply. This is deep consciousness, not superficial. Because we, at least I speak for myself, I try to remember Krishna. But when the wind comes, it just knocks over that remembrance. And my mind wanders to something else. But deep Krishna consciousness means, regardless of what happens, regardless of anything external, and when something happens difficult and pushes us, one holds on tighter, just like a child when in difficulty holds on still tighter to his parents' hand. So that's a surrendered devotee. For such a surrendered devotee, there's no fear. Devotees, this is a translation, solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, never fear any condition of life. The heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same to a devotee. A devotee is always situated in the spiritual world, therefore he does not desire anything. He is known as akam, or desireless, because he has nothing to desire except to render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How wonderful! That is his only desire, to serve Krishna. And he has so much faith and trust in his relationship with Krishna that he's fearless. No desire, akam, akama savakamava mokchakama. Krishna bhakta nishkam, akam nishkam, the same, desireless. Because a devotee is nishkam ataeva, therefore shanta, peaceful, fearless. Bhakti mukti siddhi kami, shakali ashanta. And as soon as there are desires for sense enjoyment, liberation or mystic perfections, immediately no peace. As soon as desires, one has to change everything. One wants something. One has to immediately is forced to start trying to manipulate the material energy. And then as soon as one tries to move the material energy, manipulate it, then there's trouble because one gets entangled in the complexities. This, of course, is if one is self-centered. But a devotee centered on pleasing Krishna. This is wonderful consciousness. So he has no desire except to render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Maharaj Ambarish was the most exalted devotee of the Lord, he trained his subjects in such a way that the citizens in his state were not interested in anything material, including even the happiness of heavenly planets. And the final verse we'll read. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness, and this is how, the only way one can become desireless and fearless. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics. That's the siddhi karmis. They are not siddhi karmis. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. A pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation to the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga, anina, lagima, prapti, and so on, do not give any pleasure to the devotee. As stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, Kaivalyam Narakayate Sridhasapura Kashapushpayate Dudantendriya kalasa purpatali prokatta damstrayate visrampunasukayate vida mahendra discha kitayate yat kurunya katatsha vaibhavavatam tam kurami vistuma. When a devotee has achieved the position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell, because that is a removal of all miseries, but no service, no love for Krishna. Hell. And he regards material happiness in the heavenly planet to be like a will-o'-the-wisp, an illusion. As far as the perfections of mystic power is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. A mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses, but because the senses of a devotee are engaged in the service of the Lord, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite, there is no need for separate control of the senses. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required, but a devotee's senses are all engaged in the service of the Lord, which means they are already controlled. Param Vispanavartite. A devotee's senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. And even though the material world is full of misery, the devotee considers this material world to be also spiritual, because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the spiritual world and the material world is the mentality of service. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vailagyam Uchate. When there is no mentality of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's activities are material. Prapanchikataya bhujya hari sambandhi vastuna mamukshabi paritya go vairagyam phalukatyate. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. In the construction of a high skyscraper and the construction of a temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different. For one is material and the other spiritual. Spiritual activities should not be confused with material activities and given up. Nothing connected with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is material. A devotee who considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities, and therefore is no longer attracted by material activities. Gaur Bhakti.